we get things underway this afternoon with a little country music legend who released his terrific album, The Pilgrim, 20 years ago, celebrating that on a new tour. Here's a little bit of Marty Stewart.
Scared, I've been scared out here on my own. Lost, I've been lost a million miles from home.
Marty Stewart out on tour right now for the Pilgrim's 20th anniversary tour, and he comes to Maine, the Collins Center for the Arts at the University of Maine, next Wednesday night, and we had a chance to catch up with Marty Stewart earlier today. Hey, Marty, this is Rich. Good morning.
Hi, Rich. Good morning to you.
Thank you so much for being with us. We can't wait for the show, but before we talk about the album and the tour, I have to talk about the Ken Burns documentary special. You were such a big part of that. Were you pleased with the final results?
Oh, I loved it. We worked on that show for like 8 years with those guys. And, you know, I love Ken Burns and Dayton Duncan and that crew. They're just, you know, they're as people are a perfect reflection of those shows that they do. They're just, you know, solid citizens. I love them.
We talked to Roseanne Cash, Bill Anderson, Kathy Mattea, and we talked with Ken himself. And what we heard from the other artists was just that the incredible level of trust they had from Ken and Dayton Duncan, as you mentioned, that they seemed absolutely committed to telling the full story of country music.
Well, I think it's one of those shows where everybody wins. You know, the traditional country fan that probably never thought they'd see anything like this ever in their lifetime, you know, is rewarded. And people, you know, in America and around the world, actually, that have only given country music maybe, you know, slight consideration or light consideration by way of stereotype, you know, this is a chance to really take a look at it as a culture and see how deep and rich and meaningful it is. And the third component to that, to me, is young country artists that are just jumping on and all of a sudden, you know, filling up arenas and stadiums. And one day they'll wake up and go, what is this I'm really standing on the shoulders of? And it's a good way to, you know, for the young country artists to take a look and see who they're really standing on the shoulders of. So everybody wins. I love those kind of shows.
One of my favorite parts of the documentary, it was a story that I knew a little bit about, and that's your love story with your wife now of 22 years, Connie Smith. And how old was it when that, well, not relationship, but infatuation began for you?
Well, here's what's cool about that. I went up to Walpole, Connecticut, you know, way before this show ever came out, just to spend 3 days with Dayton, going through the show, looking at facts and checking everything. And they told that story, and they said that he was 11 years old. I said, guys, I think you got that wrong. I was 12. They said, no, you got that wrong. You were 11. They did the math and corrected me on my own story. So that's the deal.
Well, and you were awfully young when you began as a professional musician. What were you, 13, 14, when you started touring with Lester Flatt?
13.
Wow. Now, did your parents realize that you were going to win this battle, and they just said, yeah, go off and make your way?
Well, it wasn't a battle. It was, I think my mother knew that it was the calling on my life, is the way she put it. And I had traveled the summer of 1972 when I was 12 years old with kind of a local group, and we traveled in Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana and went up to Indiana or Illinois, somewhere like that. So they were kind of used to the idea of me traveling. And, you know, I've said it a lot of times, walking into the, you know, Opry with Lester Flatt was like walking into the Vatican with the Pope. So I don't think they would have let me leave home with Metallica or Ozzy Osbourne, but Lester Flatt was a different story.
And you were self-taught, is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. And then after Lester retired, you went out on the road with Johnny Cash as well. It's hard to imagine a much better education in the world of country music than working with Lester Flatt and then Johnny Cash.
No, absolutely. And what's crazy about that, the first two records I ever had in my life was a Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs record and a Johnny Cash record.
Well, I remember as a younger country DJ playing hillbilly rock right out of the box when that came out. And it was, and it remains, such a very unique sound.
Oh, it was a good record. And it was the record I needed at the time and what I was looking for that gave me a reason to get a bus and a band and some cowboy clothes and, you know, go out and start peddling our point of view to the world. And I will forever be indebted to Hillbilly Rock for, you know, getting that part of the job done.
We're talking with Marty Stewart here on Downtown. Well, this is the 20th anniversary tour for The Pilgrim, an album that was in many ways a turning point for you. Is it the album that got you back to where you started in many ways?
Yeah. Well, Hillbilly Rock was, you know, I tried so many ways to have a hit, and I spent about 3 or 4 years just getting, just, you know, one failure after another before Hillbilly Rock came along. So I would have pretty much recorded anything that I thought would have got me a job. But Hillbilly Rock was kind of one end of the bookshelf. And we had such an incredible run, you know, commercially and in the world of country music, up and down charts after Hillbilly Rock, over a decade's worth. And then one day I woke up and went, you know what? I'm starting to feel like a parody of myself. It was time to go in deeper and find the roots of it and the bedrock of it all and get back to, again, standing on the shoulders of that. And The Pilgrim was a line in the dirt record that took me back, you know, toward my heart and soul. Was not a commercial success at the time, anything but a commercial success, but it was the deepest record I'd ever done. And so it got kicked off to the side, but 20 years later, it's back around with a book around it and released on vinyl with 9 extra tracks, and it's been really well received.
Yeah, the new deluxe edition is out, and people may not know the story of The Pilgrim, your hometown, Philadelphia, Mississippi, based on a true story.
Yeah, it was a love triangle down there that was of Shakespearean proportion. And the more I told the story to myself, I thought, well, this is a real story. And, you know, back to the Ken Burns thing, Ken and I talk about country music being at its very finest when it's telling stories. It's the stories. So this Pilgrim story popped up in my mind, and I thought, but it needs an underscore. What's the musical score of this thing? And so I scored it from the evolution of country music from old-time music to contemporary country music. You know, Ralph Stanley Kane, Earl Scruggs, Johnny Cash, George Jones, Emmylou Harris, Connie Smith, Pam Tillis, Uncle Josh Graves. They all came by to help me tell this story. And it really was a bit of an opera. And so it was probably a little heady and ahead of the curve at that time. But, you know, as time has gone on, it seems to have found its spot.
Well, it sure has. I love the songs on that album. One of my favorites you co-wrote with Mike Campbell of the Heartbreakers, Dragging Around These Chains of Love.
Yeah. And that's a song that, you know, I love Mike Campbell. As a rock and roll guitar player, there is nobody in this world that makes more memorable parts. Hey, you know, I love the Heartbreakers. They were my favorite American rock and roll band. And those songs of Tom's are half of those records, and the other half to me is Campbell's arrangements. And so I went out there with a fragment of an idea to California, and Campbell and I sat down and, you know, talked out this song, and probably an hour later it was done. So I like those kind of writing sessions.
Well, as somebody who grew up surrounded by talented musicians, you know the value of putting together a great ensemble, and boy, the Fabulous Superlatives, one of the best and most talented groups in the business.
Oh, the band of a lifetime for me. A legacy band. You know, I grew up watching bands. I loved bands. It was the Buckaroos, Johnny, the Tennessee Three, Porter Wagoner and the Wagon Master, Merle Haggard and the Strangers, Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys, you know, on and on and on. And those were my kind of bands. And so the Superlatives, absolutely a 21st century version of one of those bands.
You're a great country music historian and also a collector as well. Can you talk a little bit about some of the amazing guitars in your collection?
Hank Williams, 1939 Martin D45, George Jones, Martin guitar, Porter Wagoners, Johnny Cash's old J200 that was on the cover of so many of those records and wrote so many songs, Merle Haggard's guitar, Pop Staples guitar, Carl Perkins guitar, Glenn Campbell's guitar, on and on. So there's a lot of good ones. I invite you to come play them with me.
Well, the country music documentary series also got a lot of airplay and downloads and sales for artists that had not enjoyed success. Even Jimmy Rogers' catalog suddenly exploded as well. Where's country music going as somebody who values the history of our music. Where do you see it headed in the future?
Well, I think it's, you know, country music is ever evolving. And the thing that it feels more pop culture to me now than ever before. And probably it's always been kind of a reflection of us as a people in general. And so there was a time where I felt more earthiness in country music. It feels very suburban to me right now. And but the one thing that I don't care what it does up at the top of the country music world, it's the root system. That is the rock of ages, if you will, of anything can happen on top of that. But the root system of country music is so deep and so rich, so vast, that it can pretty well support anything that happens on top of it. So I love the fact that the roots of country music are alive and well all over the nation. There's, you know, traditional country music being played, old-time music being played, bluegrass music being played, western swing still being played by up-and-comers, young people that still get it in their hearts. But on the top of that, you still have, you know, the pop culture end of country music that are filling up arenas, you know, totally mainstream. So I think it's kind of designed to do that from back in the 20s.
Marty, thank you so much. I've enjoyed your music for so many years. Looking forward to the show next week. Travel safely.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks for the talk.